As we all await for Selection Sunday, we're back with another episode of the Purple and Bold podcast. I'm back in Harrisonburg, so Katie Harper is here with me to dive into everything that's been happening with the Dukes, men's and women's basketball, spring sports, spring football right around the corner. Let's start with that. Spring football coming soon. Right as Katie gets ready to leave us, go on vacation. But
yeah,
but
planned it perfectly.
Yeah, and then I will probably also be out of town for the NCAA tournament right around the time spring football starts. So we'll get other people in here on coverage for that. But just, you know, briefly, as that gets ready to start, having covered Bob Chesney now for a little bit of time, gotten to talk to him a few times, you see what he's done throughout the offseason, kind of getting a sense of his style. What do you think will be different about just how spring practices are handled with this new staff?
I really think they're going to be a lot more kind of fun to watch and a little more energetic. And I take this back to when I was a freshman and a sophomore and Mike Houston was here. There was music playing during pretty much every single practice. They were having a good time, obviously still practicing and getting better. And then the music kind of went away when Cignetti came. And I wouldn't be shocked if there's just music blasting on a random Tuesday morning when they're practicing and getting ready to go. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think it's going to be a high-energy practice from kind of some of the things I had seen of Bob Chesney from just videos from when he was at Holy Cross. So I think that's definitely going to be something that translates down to Harrisonburg. And I think it's going to translate well into the JMU program.
Yeah, the Holy Cross videos, I was going to bring those up because it is a much different look for the head coach in particular practice. You know, I'm assuming that the stuff that they decided to put on camera was similar to how it is just on a daily basis. And it wasn't just played up for a camera, but definitely different styles there where he's out on the field really getting into the players and interacting and talking to them and hyping them up and stuff, as opposed to Cignetti. A little bit of more of an old school vibe. He wasn't like, you know, kind of remember like seeing videos or like stuff about, you know, coaches in like the 60s and 70s where they'd like be up on the tower, like just looking over everybody. And that was kind of how the head coach observed and ran a practice. And Cignetti wasn't in a tower, but he was also always kind of off to the side, kind of just watching everything.
Like, he always had his arms crossed and he just was looking. And you could
Definitely an observer in practice until the end, and then he always, you know, had his discussions with people at the end. But that aspect of it I think is going to be much different as far as just how active and vocal you see the head coach be during practices.
And I will say, when the team went down to Texas for their bowl game and it was Robo in charge, there were, I would say, the way Robo ran practice will be much closer to how I think Bob Chesney will run practice. Like, they had the music going again. They were having fun. They were running around. Of course, part of that probably is the environment, too. They're practicing for their first ever bowl game, so it's supposed to be fun and whatnot. So I think not only Chesney's going to be having fun at these practices and kind of being upbeat, but I think a lot of the coaches are going to be all over the place and just kind of helping out wherever.
Yeah, I feel like that was probably a mixture of, like, one, that's more Robo style than Cignetti's, and two, in that situation where a lot of these guys are not happy with how things went down, how they're losing their coach, they're, you know, some guys are deciding not to play in a bowl game, things like that. It makes sense to say, hey, we're gonna like keep the vibe positive, we're gonna make this fun, this is gonna be a good place to be, and we're gonna reward the people who are here. I think that's probably part of it, but it also, yeah, they definitely just different personalities from a lot of people. And you got to imagine that was one of the reasons why it was pretty easy for Chesney to say, hey, I want to keep Robo around and keep him as part of the staff, because they just seemed to kind of mesh that way.
It definitely. And I've been saying for like the last several weeks that I was so excited to kind of for spring football to start for a lot of reasons, obviously. But I really, really wanted to see a Bob Chesney practice, and that has been what I had told people for several weeks now. So I'm not gonna lie, I'm a little bummed that I'm gonna miss the first week or so, but I think it's just building the anticipation to get back and then see it like up close and personal and be able to talk to these guys too after some of these practices, because he's toward the end of the football season last year, he slowly, like through bowl practices, kind of implemented some of the stuff that he wanted to carry over. But it's now finally going to be his practice. And so I'm really curious to see how the players respond to it too.
Yeah, see how the players respond. It'll be nice to see like what his staff is like in their, you know, natural environment. Because like I said, you know, we were talking about Robo and how he does things different. And it wasn't that big of a surprise because even in his own little corner of I'm working with the offensive line guys, you could always tell there was more energy there, things like that. You could pick up on how different assistants do things a little bit differently. So it'll be fun to see not just Chesney, but everybody else he's brought in and how it all kind of comes together as a group.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really cool, like you said, to see the assistant coaches and how their personality shines through. Because when Robo took over as the acting head coach, I had talked to some former players, both on the offensive line and then guys who were on the defensive line, to just kind of see what it was like to go against those guys in practice. And I just still remember Rondell Carter said that once Robo came to town, the offensive line at practice started to play with a little bit more swagger and a little bit more energy. So I'm so excited to just kind of see how this new staff kind of trickles down into the student athletes.
Yeah. You know, we'll find out more and more about football here in the next couple weeks. Stuff that's been going on here in Harrisonburg since you know, we got into postseason basketball. We can quickly recap baseball. They did see their winning streak come to an end, but going into that game, number 10 in the country in RPI, which, you know, getting into what will be a good and competitive league with some, you know, top caliber teams in the conference, that's not nothing to be up there as the conference season is about to start.
Yeah, and I think this week they also dropped their first home game after their win streak was snapped in at East Tennessee. But I think these last three games for them will go a long way in how they prepare and perform in Sun Belt play. Niagara came down for this two-game midweek series, and I think caught them off guard a little bit. They threw out some really, really good pitchers that went the two games, and the first game, it took until the bottom of the ninth when Mason Dunaway got a walk-off single to win that game. And then yesterday's game was not the best showing. Marlon Eikenberry, after the game, was pretty clear that he was not very thrilled with how his offense performed. He said that the day before he had said that they'd made uncharacteristic mistakes. And then on Wednesday, he was like, yeah, we didn't perform well at all on offense. And so I think kind of hitting that wall and being like, okay, we need to readjust how we're looking at pitches. We need to settle down a little bit more. I think that's definitely going to help them, especially heading into this weekend when they're facing pretty much the gauntlet of the Sun Belt right off the bat.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's probably a little bit different scenario for JMU when they do enter this weekend series, or this, I guess, midweek series as the as a favorite. As opposed to they're often in that situation where it's like, hey, this is a big midweek non-conference series for us. Let's pull out all the stops. Let's throw our guys, maybe if the other team's not throwing their best pitchers, things like that. So it is a little bit of like a reversal of roles to have JMU have a team like Niagara come in here and say like, hey, if we can get one, that's going to be huge for us. Let's play this like it's a weekend conference series.
And I think, too, one of the things from this midweek series was Tuesday's game. They had Donovan Burke, who's kind of been their midweek starter all season so far, come out, and he pitched an absolute masterclass against this team. He went a career-long 7.2 innings, just absolutely unreal outing. I think I'd done the math after, and he averaged about like 3.5 pitches per batter, so he was extremely efficient. He picked a guy off on first after. I think he walked him. So an absolute masterclass by this. He's a graduate student, so he's been here for a while, and it kind of was that perfect showing for him. And I think if JMU needed to win a game, I think it needed to be that one. I think there would have been a big kind of hit to their morale if Burke had gone out, pitched the way he did, and then they ended up losing that game. So I think that one was definitely an exciting one for them to win. And then Wednesday, yeah, they kind of went through a rotation of pitchers, and some looked good, some looked okay, and then others, yeah, they got pulled pretty fast, and I think Eikenberry is going to be a little frustrated with that.
Yeah, on the softball diamond next door, the JMU women, they are picking it up offensively a little bit. KK Mathis, you know, is really hitting the ball now at this point, coming off an all Sun Belt season as a freshman. they look good offensively heading into their Sun Belt opener this week against what's now a top 25 Texas State team coming to town. So they really jump right into it in conference play.
And both softball and baseball getting hit with great conference openers. I think, obviously, yeah, that's going to be a good test. I think being at home obviously will benefit them. The softball crowds in Harrisonburg are always a lot of fun, and I think they definitely do give the team a little bit of a boost. But just feels like they've been off for a while. I kept seeing them this week at the baseball game, so it felt weird that they weren't playing. So I think it's going to be a nice, exciting time for them to get home, play some games.
Yeah, and you know, lacrosse, we'll get all the spring sports here. Lacrosse team, they dropped their first one at Maryland, still ranked top five, I believe, you know, heading into this week. They weren't likely to go undefeated, especially against the schedule they're playing. But I think still very optimistic about their ability to probably make a deep NCAA tournament run. But any concerns that the offense just wasn't as dynamic against a Maryland team that typically tries to, you know, maybe like limit the high scoring games?
Yes and no. I think it was probably a little bit expected, especially at this point in the season with how the JMU attack has started so well, that was definitely a focus for Maryland going in of like, okay, how can we, you know, take Bella Peterson out of this a little bit, Maddie Epke out of it. I think, like you said, though, it would have been unrealistic to expect them to go undefeated all year. And so taking a one loss now, I don't think is necessarily too much of something to worry about, because for the parts of that game, they played well. Their first quarter was good. The scoring dropped off in the second and third quarter, so that's definitely going to be something they look at. But when it comes down to it, the loss, I think, was coming regardless of if it was against Maryland or somewhere later. And I think it's more one they'll just learn from than really let it affect their day and kind of dampen the mood.
Yeah. So we can move on to some basketball, because obviously one of the biggest times the JMU's had on the basketball court in program history, really. But, you know, definitely in the past 11 years, the JMU men, they make it to the NCAA tournament with a dominating victory in the Sun Belt Championship game. It was very close to having a double Duke march with the JMU women. They fall in overtime in the Sun Belt Championship game. Though the rubber match with Marshall, where each team had won on the other's home floor, JMU more than any other team in the Sun Belt seemed to kind of have a way to attack Marshall's full court press and also like to guard the way Marshall likes to really shoot in the open floor, things like that. JMU's broke out that zone defense against them again early on in the game, was making them shoot mid-range jumpers again, and they had a lead. They pushed it out to 7 points, I think, multiple times in regulation, then fell behind by 10 in the fourth quarter before coming back and forcing overtime. It was just a wild game, a wild stat sheet with 39 turnovers for JMU. I think like close to 70 missed shots for Marshall. Both teams just looked at the stats and was like, how are we even in this one? And also looked at it as like, if we'd have done this thing better, we'd have won by 10. Like it was crazy game that in the end, Marshall, the regular season champs, showed why and pulled through, and they'll go to the NCAA tournament. Now we wait to see if the JMU women will play in what's known as the WBIT, a new tournament that's kind of replaced the WNIT, although the WNIT still exists. JMU won't accept a bid to the WNIT, so a little bit different postseason look on women's basketball side, but there potentially is more games in the future for the JMU women.
What a game. That game was just, I was watching it at home. I think I was like trying to write an article at the same time. I'm like, I can't even focus on what I'm doing because this game just was absolutely captivating. I think it got, when JMU went down, I think it was about 10, and I was like, ugh, I don't know if they're going to fight back. And I had even texted someone when Goodman came in. I was like, you know, last month she was really struggling with her free throws. That may be someone you want to like, if you're Marshall, if you're going to foul someone, get the ball in her hand. And stone cold right at the end to sink the two to send it to overtime. That game was just, I think what everybody wanted I would hope, as a sports fan, I hope that would be what you would want out of a conference championship game. But yeah, I definitely, after watching that, I think you have to hope that obviously JMU's season doesn't come to a close with that, because I think they have some good games left in them.
Yeah, and it's a program that has, if they do get into the WBIT, has embraced that type of tournament as an opportunity to carry something over to the next year. You know, a few years ago, they made a deep run into the semifinals of WNIT, played some really good teams, including Virginia Tech. Yeah,
beat Kenny Brooks and Convo.
During that time, they almost beat a Northwestern team that the next year was one of the best teams in the country with basically the same roster. That was a really good JMU team, and they, you know, used that run to have a really, really incredible regular season the next year with largely the same roster. Unfortunately, that season got completely derailed by COVID, canceling everything at the end. But if they can get in, and I think they're probably borderline as far as the WBIT, and maybe some of it has to do with who accepts bids to what. I don't know where, like, other women's basketball programs, like, what they, like, think about the WNIT versus the WBIT, or the WBIT versus, like, oh, we think we should have been in the NCAA tournament and we're not. Like, I don't know what other programs will do as far as, like, accepting postseason bids. But Shauna Regan made it very clear that that's the only option for JMU to play in the postseason, is this new NCAA-sponsored. Basically, it's the same. It's the version of the NIT on the men's side, even though they couldn't name it the WNIT because WNIT already existed, but wasn't owned by the same people. The NCAA runs both the NIT and the WBIT, so it's essentially that same level of tournament. And you know, I really have no idea if JMU will get an opportunity to play anymore. I think they want to. I think, you know, there's players on the team, you know, like I have in Bristow or Carol Miller, who this is their last opportunity to play games. I think they all want to play pretty badly, but I honestly have no idea what's going to happen there.
Yeah, I think it's definitely one of those sit, wait and see, and it's probably not a comfortable wait and see either.
Yeah, that's the other Selection Sunday aspect of this for JMU. Early in the evening, everybody's going to be watching the show on CBS and seeing where the Dukes end up. Later on, we'll find out about the JMU women. But back to the big selection show. They're going to open up the Atlantic Union Bank Center on Sunday to the public. I think they said they're handing out posters or something to the first 300. They had a pretty decent crowd for the women's selection show last year in the AUBC. I imagine it'll be a big one this time around. And, you know, it's just really curious to see what kind of seed they end up getting and where they'll end up going. And it seems like a lot of the bracketology, I admit I didn't check like just 10 minutes before we sat down, but, you know, here Thursday afternoon, a lot of the bracketologists seem to have JMU around 11 or 12, which I think would be pretty interesting if they get into that range as far as the possibilities of advancing.
Yeah, I think I'm not going to lie. I think there's a good chance that they can make some things interesting once the tournament gets going, especially if they can get that 11 or 12 seed. And I know the initial reaction right after the game, especially on social media from media members at big conglomerates, were saying, like, this is a team that, you know, not a lot of schools are going to want to see in their side of the bracket. They're not going to want to see the Dukes just walking into an arena ready to play a basketball game, because, you know, I think they've shown time and time again what they can do. And even if it's on a neutral court or a court where the other team is going to have more fans, I think it's definitely just a program that so far this year has shown that we can score when we need to score and we can win when we need to win.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about the seeding too is, you know, I'm sure you'll see a lot of people who will make the argument, hey, they're a 31-3 team. They ran through their, have two of the longest win streaks in the country this year separately of each other. They've gone undefeated for multiple months. They've won more road games than anybody else. Like, these and things like road games are things that the committee like says they look at and value. And you know, maybe not against necessarily the best competition, but they were winning a lot of games outside of the Atlantic Union Bike Center. You're going to see people argue like, hey, why isn't this team an 8 or a 9 seed? And I think that's, you know, a legitimate argument. But at the same time, if you're JMU, you're probably better off being a double-digit seed to a certain degree if you want to make it past the first weekend, which, you know, it's almost crazy to be talking about that as a legitimate goal for JMU basketball, where given where it was 5 years ago. But, like, you know, it really makes sense for JMU fans to be looking, hey, what's the best path for us to make the Sweet 16? Because there are situations where that seems quite possible.
I know we've talked about it like every week about the growth of this program, but I saw someone's tweet about this, so I went back and did the math. They're at 31 wins. When I was in school, it took them my freshman, sophomore, and then the majority of my junior year before that program got to 31 wins. So it was like 2.5 seasons before they had 31 wins, and they did that all in 1 year this year. So it's just insane to see where this program has gotten. Like you said, I think to advance out of maybe the first weekend, yeah, maybe you do want that lower seed. And I'm not going to lie, something about this team just kind of gives this mindset that they almost do better when people overlook them and maybe put them in like, oh, well, they're not going to win this game. I just think they kind of thrive on that, of being, quote unquote, the underdog.
Yeah, and it's very interesting because if they're in the 11 or 12 range, they'll, you know, technically be the underdog as far as seeding goes. But their teams, like, there are 5 and 6 seeds out there that if they got matched up against, I wouldn't be shocked if they were the favorite from Vegas. And then also you look at, okay, so let's say they are let's say they're a 12, I'm trying to remember exactly how it matches up. But if they're 12, they get a 5, that's a winnable first round game. And then let's say you got a team like Kansas, which is falling apart right now. Don't know if their two All-Americans are going to play in the NCAA tournament without Hunter Dickinson or Kevin McCullough. That's a mid-major roster that could be getting a 3 or a 4 seed and be waiting for you in the second round if you're JMU. Like, it all has a lot to do with matchups and brackets and how it all plays out. They might get a completely unfavorable one, but it's not crazy at all to be thinking about like scenarios where they're not just like a possibility. They're like one of the favorites to advance.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right there. And I think especially with kind of how some of these players right now are stepping up and playing on JMU. I mean, Arkansas State went into that final and realistically they shut down, you know, TJ Bickerstaff. They shut down Terrence Edwards. And then it's like, okay, Xavier Brown just goes off for probably the half of his life. So now with the roster that you're looking at with JMU and how deep they can go and how much scoring they can go or they can get from all of these different players, there are a lot of teams in this country that, yeah, I don't know if they can necessarily hang in with JMU if JMU gets hot at the right time.
Yeah, and, you know, Mark Byington is a really good coach. He's a good game coach. He's a very good in-game coach. He runs rugby practices. He does a lot of things, but I think as much as anything, if you want to highlight how they got to this point, you can look at how they built the roster to get to where they are, to have what is a roster that can compete with high major programs. And I'm hoping to get enough interviews done here in the next week or two to like really dive into it in an article. But, you know, he's able to find guys like a TJ Bickerstaff, who comes from Boston College and started a lot of games there, who is a clearly, you know, just by any definition, he is a high major caliber player, and he's able to convince him that, hey, JMU is the place for you if you want to take it to that next level, to show that your scoring ability is there, to show you can do some of these things, handling the ball and stuff before you pursue a pro career. Like, we can help each other. He's able to land a guy like that. He's able to convince guys like Terrence Edwards and Julian Wooden to stay at JMU for 4 and 5 years when that's really hard to do in this day and age with a modest NIL program. I mean, they have some. Those guys are getting some money, but it's not probably as much as especially Terrence Edwards could get other places. But he convinced those guys they wanted to be here. And you see a lot of coaches, too, decide, hey, we're going one way or the other with this new landscape. We're either going to go all in on keeping the guys that we have and developing guys for 4 years and doing it. That was the App State way. That's the Florida Atlantic way of doing it. And then you have other guys that was like, hey, we're going to completely turn over our roster. There's a completely new, better team available to us because we can work the transfer portal. And Byington has done both mm-hmm. really well. And even beyond that, he's continued to recruit high school players. So some people have completely given up on recruiting high school players. And he was able to recognize, hey, there's a guy like Xavier Brown who 5 years ago would have been an early signee in November as of his senior year, already had his destination picked. And he's available in May of his senior year because people are looking for fifth-year seniors and like trying to get older and looking in the portal. And this kid can play, and this kid can help us, you know, if not right away, he will help us down the line. And he's done a little bit of everything putting this roster together when I think a lot of other coaches got tunnel vision on, hey, either transfers is the way or high school kids is the way or retaining our players is the way to get here. And he's done some of it all. And I think that's been the most incredible thing that Byington has done to get JMU to this point. Like, I don't know of anybody else in the country who's done it all that way.
He just sees things in players that you're like, maybe it will take time to come out on the court for everybody to see, but he sees it early and it ends up benefiting him and the program that he's at. I mean, like you mentioned Xavier Brown, like I had said it during the conference final, like there's just something about watching him play for as young as he is. He's just calming. Like he's going to play it the right way. He's going to, he seems to be perfect from three all the time. And it just settles the game down. And like, these are guys that Byington went out and he brought them in, and it's turned into this program that, you know, 5 years ago, I don't think anybody really expected them to be here. And I think you also have to give a shout out to, like you said, Julian Wooden, who has seen arguably the dark days of this program to now in his final year getting to go to the NCAA tournament. It's just been a wild journey for this team, and the success that it has is, yes, in part to the players, but a lot of it is to Mark Byington and who he was able to bring in both on the court and with his staff.
Yeah, and I mean, I think to me, like, the flexibility is like one of the biggest things too, because Xavier Brown's scholarship was being held to go out and get a veteran guard. Like that spring and summer that they got him, like the intention the whole time was, we have a scholarship available, we're going to go find somebody in the portal. And then they go out and they're looking at some guys who are playing AAU ball that are a year younger than him because he's playing an extra spring of AAU because he hadn't signed yet. And they see him and they're like, okay, you know what? Actually, this guy can help us. This is the guy. And they go away from what their original plan was because they see him. And, you know, you never seen anything pay off any more than when 2 years later he scored 21 points in the first half of the conference championship game.
But it was just an unreal performance. Like, just watching it as someone, you know, who loves sports, you're like, okay, certainly he can't keep this up for an entire half, and he did. And him and Jalen Carey, they looked really good in that game, and I think it's just showing how well this team has been coached and put together.
Yeah, and you know, hard to decide, you know, how much you want to talk about the future. You know, funny that, you know, after the game, with all the rumors about, you know, if you know, Byington will be looking for another job, then the worries about, you know, who's going to stay if that happens or even if it doesn't happen. You know, it's funny, Terrence Edwards, you know, when that championship game over, he's talking about, you know, he's talking about Jalen Carey. He's talking about Xavier Brown, and he's saying, you know, those guys aren't going anywhere. And, you know, maybe, I don't know if he's like completely authorized to speak for them, but that's the vibe of where this team is. Like, it's all about right now, and it's all about like JMU, and that's not where everybody is. I mean, you see guys who are declaring for the portal like the second their seasons are over. And like, I mean, frankly, like Pepperdine was playing in a conference tournament. They've had, you know, their coach got fired and things like that, and it was a little bit different situation, but they're playing in a conference tournament, and they clearly had guys who had like told reporters, hey, I'm in the portal, don't say it until our game is over, because it's like as soon as the buzzer sounded, like there were tweets out there like so-and-so is intends to enter the transfer portal. And it's like he hadn't even left the floor. Yeah. So like
that's you wild. Know,
that's stuff that's happening even before they play their last games. And that is not happening at JMU. Like for all the talk about like if, you know, Mark Byington has a handshake deal at West Virginia or somewhere else right now, like, you know, they just offered a kid from the DMV area who's been playing at a prep school in California, like a point guard. Like they're still recruiting for JMU right now. You know, I don't know who's going to be back next year, whether it be coaching staff or players, but right now everybody is completely in on JMU and in on making this like a special ending to a special season.
Yeah, I think everybody would agree that they deserved this tournament appearance with the season that they put together. And I think to see it finally coming to fruition right now is just absolutely wild. And to see it in Jeff Boren's last year, I mean, this man has probably gotten the best farewell tour for a job that you can imagine. I don't know if there are many people who've had a better final year. And the fact that he was able to share it and kind of just enjoy it all too. Like, this is just such a wild time to watch JMU sports. And, you know, I remember before I graduated from college, I remember thinking, and mind you, this was before the jump to the Sun Belt, I remember thinking, man, JMU sports are kind of at their peak right now. I don't know if there's another level for them. I will admit now, like 4 years later, I was wrong. They're at a completely higher level. And it's just been an absolutely wild time. And to see all of the different programs that have had success this year that have made the NCAA tournament in their respective sport or have gotten to a bowl game for football, it's just so wild and almost unbelievable that it's happening in an athletic director's final year after he's been at the school for 25 years, when I think I had read a while ago the average like lifespan, quote unquote, for a athletic director at a single school is like 7 years.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, I talked to him briefly on the court, like after their championship game. And, you know, I joked, I was like, you know, you can actually do it now. Like, I didn't necessarily believe you were honestly going to retire unless they made the NCAA tournament. And he's like, yeah, he's like, it's going to happen. He's like, I'm done now.
And I can only imagine Jeff Boren is probably really, really hoping that Mark Byington does not leave, because I don't know if he wants to hire another coach.
Yeah, I mean, because it'll be the last thing he does, because I think the AD hire is probably coming not too long after that. So, yeah, I mean, you could talk a little bit about Bourne and basketball too, because 5 years ago, basketball was the black mark on his resume. Like he, you know, be frank, he ran off a coach who was not necessarily the most popular guy in Harrisonburg, but was more successful than anybody they'd had in a long time, in Matt Brady. And, you know, he had made the NCAA tournament recently and they just didn't click as an AD coach situation, working relationship. So Matt Brady's gone. And then he couldn't, by all accounts, he couldn't make the hire he wanted to make for Brady's replacement. That talks broke down, didn't make the hire he wanted to make. And then turns around and hires Lewis Rowe, a former player who is absolutely beloved by everybody at JMU.
Great, great JMU alum.
Yes, and just absolutely beloved as a player and a person and everything. And, you know, you're crossing your fingers hoping that that's going to work out. But he frankly did not have the resume needed to get a job of that caliber at that time. And that doesn't work out. Lou recruits really well but doesn't win games. And so Bourne kind of knew that was the last thing he needed to do at JMU, was to turn the men's basketball program around. He had the arena coming, and he set his sights. Like, he did not entertain the idea of hiring anyone who was not a proven winning head coach. And he found Mark Byington, who had gotten it done at a tougher job at Georgia Southern, and saw the ability to at least do that, at least win at that level at JMU and win 20 games a year and have yourself competitive in conference. But given the resources that JMU has compared to Georgia Southern, everything else, like, it's not surprising that he's been able to take it to the next level. 31-3, and us like saying like you know, is Sweet 16 attainable? That's a little bit surprising. But to get back to the NCAA tournament, I don't think it's surprising. And, you know, I think it says a lot about Byington. It says a ton about Bourne that he was able to lock in on what was kind of the lone knock against him as the athletic director. A lot of people might have just said, like, you know what, we're a football school, and that's fine. And he didn't settle for that. And that's probably he's going to go down as, you know, if there's a Mount Rushmore for JMU athletics, he's going to be on there, you know, with Ron Carrier, and then pick your other team.
Well, see, but, I wouldn't just limit it to JMU athletics. I think you could just throw him up on the Mount Rushmore of like JMU as a whole, as this. As a school, because of what he's done in 25 years. And it always goes back to 2018, and he was one of four or five, I can't remember the exact number, athletic directors that were up for an award that recognized the best athletic director of the year. And he was the only one without, at the time, an FBS football program. And it just speaks to everything he has done in his time.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you might as well start planning a statue and a street with his name and face on it. One at the you know, Plecker Center at, you know, Bridgeforce Stadium, and one at the AUBC. Like, pick.
Yeah, my friend
a
and
choice.
I.
A street,
we were
one place, a statue the other. He deserves it.
We were talking about where the Jeff Bourne statue should be. I'm like, well, I would say the football stadium. She said the out front of the AUBC, and I then just voted. I'm like, let's just take down the JMU or the James Madison statue on the quad. Put up Jeff Bourne there. Yeah. Call it a day.
Yeah, I think maybe you could put a statue outside Bridgeforce Stadium, and then name the street going into the AUBC garage. I think you could make that like Jeff Bourne way or something. Like, it's he deserves both, you know. There's enough stuff called Carrier on campus. Like, we need some Bourne stuff. But you know, a little bit long episode today, but there was a ton to talk about, and we're gonna have plenty more to discuss as we move along with the Dukes in the NCAA tournament. But for now, we'll go ahead and wrap it up. You've been listening to the Purple and Bold podcast. I'm Shane Metland, been here with Katie Harper. And thank you for clicking and tuning in.